radio and you listen to, you know, social media, you are in your own head, so you have a chance to think properly about subjects.
Also, I just wonder, if you're scrubbing something really hard, does that mean you get more excited about the subject?
Oh, there are some topics that mean people might have a hole in their carpet when I finish vacuuming it with fury.
Well, great to have you on. Thanks for being on Antisocial. Also down the line is Alka Sagel-Cuthbert, who's director of Don't Divide Us, which is a campaign group advocating for what it calls colour-blind anti-racism. Hello, Alka.
Hello.
Just explain a bit more about what Don't Divide Us actually is.
We're there to sort of make sure a common sense view on race and racism and anti-racism isn't overshadowed by a much more radical kind of definition of these things. And our recent work is looking at the Equality Act and some of the effects of it.
And I'm sure some of that will come up in our discussion in this episode. You just talked about radical interpretations of anti-racism. What do you mean by the word radical?
I suppose what I mean is there's a difference between a view that assumes our society and the people in it are basically okay, but that there are people who will intentionally or unintentionally be bad actors, discriminate, act unfairly, etc., and that we have the law to address those cases. And then another, what I would call the more radical view, takes as its starting point that everything in this society is racist or liable to be racist unless we actively and continually try and work against that.
Okay, to be discussed in the next hour. Let's go back then to this report in The Telegraph. And what was your first reaction when you heard about this story? And why did you want to do one of your political cleaning videos about it?
Well, the first thing I noticed was that, certainly on the bit that The Telegraph shared online, was, you know, they had seen all of these adverts demanding that they had Muslim-only tenants. And I thought, well, if that was true, that would be wrong, because it is indeed against the Equalities Act. But is it true? Because, I mean, on a lot of these things, I have noticed that a lot of the media start from a point where they know people will get riled up. And things like saying, I have noticed a lot of adverts saying, can I have a female-only flat share? Do not rile people up. So I thought, the first thing I'll do is go and have a look to see what's going on. And I discovered that, in fact, you can advertise for Muslims only. You can advertise for women only, quite legally, for the reason that if you are in your own home, you have a right to say the people you share your home with.
We'll come on to the laws in a second. Alka, what was your initial reaction?
Well, I think it was not that dissimilar from Anne's, actually. I think it's very important to maintain two things in our society. One is a public sphere where we are all equal, and in that sense I think using public communications to advertise for specific ethnic or religious groups is wrong, because it's sending a message to a broader set of people. However, at the same time, especially if you're a lodger landlord, I think it's quite important the law doesn't extend into the privacy of our decision making at a private level, because that breaches our freedoms.
Now, Anne and Alka, it sounds like you've got quite a good understanding of equality law as it stands at the moment and how it applies in the property sector, but not everyone listening to this programme will, so we called up Sarah Steinhardt, who is a barrister at Doughty Street Chambers in London, to get her to explain.
It is unlawful for a landlord or anyone else who manages property to discriminate against an occupier or someone who wants to occupy the premises along the lines of a protected characteristic. And for that purpose, it's exactly the same to say, for example, no Muslims, as it is to say Muslims only. Because as a matter of law, what you're doing is you're excluding a group of people along the lines of a protected characteristic.
That's providing a property for rent as a sort of landlord with tenants. What about if you're looking at a landlord who's taking in a lodger?
The first and most obvious one, before I come on to your point about lodgers, is that it is not unlawful discrimination to treat a disabled person more favourably. So, for example, if you are a landlord and you have a wheelchair-adapted property, it is entirely permissible to advertise that only to wheelchair users. So that's actually what we see far more often. It's a unique freestanding exception.
Okay, so but back to the situation of lodgers then. So talk me through the exceptions.
Okay, so there is a narrow exception that applies in relation to small properties. And basically what it means is that if you've got a spare room in your house and you want to rent out that to someone who is not part of your household, then you are exempt from the anti-discrimination provisions of the Equality Act, except insofar as they apply to race. It is very narrow, so it wouldn't cover situations where, for example, you were living in a property and there were four bedrooms, you're occupying one of those bedrooms, and you want to let out the other three bedrooms to other individuals. That wouldn't be caught by this exception. So it's really about people that are sharing a home, either with the landlord or with a member of the landlord's family.
Right, so just to be clear, a woman living on her own in a two-bedroom house could rent out her second bedroom and say, I only want another woman living in that room, but they wouldn't be able to say, I only want a woman of the same race as me living in that room.
Yes, yes, absolutely.
Right. And that exemption on race is race only. It doesn't cover religion or belief.
No, it doesn't. So they could say, I only want a Christian woman or something of that nature.
What about a situation where it's flatmates looking for a new flatmate?
Those arrangements can get a bit legally complicated. Typically, what happens in those situations is that there is a joint tenancy between the various tenants. The landlord is letting to all of them jointly, and then they collectively arrange for somebody else to join them in that house share. In that situation, the landlord isn't living with them, so it simply doesn't apply.
Oh, right. And so therefore, the current flatmates don't really have any say over the identity of their new flatmate, because it's up to the landlord who the new flatmate is.
Yeah, basically.
And that landlord is bound by the rules that we've been discussing about the Equality Act.
Yes, exactly.
And then we've got this new Renters' Rights Act, which comes into force actually while this programme is being broadcast. Does that change the situation?
Well, there is this ban on what we call the no DSS rule. So for a long time, there's been an issue about landlords advertising properties on this sort of no DSS basis, so i.e. a blanket ban on anyone who is in receipt of the housing element of universal credit or housing benefits. And this is a rule which disproportionately adversely affects women and disabled people who are much more likely to need to rely on welfare benefits. The Renters' Rights Act should deal with that. That is the theory. But whether or not that has the effect of changing the mood amongst landlords is yet to be seen.
Thank you to Sarah Steinhardt. And it's not clear how many of the Telegraph's findings fell under the exception for live-in landlords. Anne, I'll start with you. Sounds like you know all about the Equality Act and the exceptions and the carve-outs. What do you think about this carve-out for live-in landlords who are letting out a room? Why should they get special treatment compared to any other kind of landlord?
Because you should be able to say the people you want to live with. You know, for example, obviously, a lot of women, single women, might feel that they didn't really want to rent their room to a man. And that, I don't think, is unreasonable. If you have dietary rules as part of your religion, and I know very little about dietary rules, but, for example, I would assume if you kept strictly kosher, your kitchen would need to be treated in a certain way so that you could continue to be completely kosher. Mm. And obviously somebody who didn't keep kosher might not understand those rules. I mean, I really have no problem with that whatsoever.
Okay, Alka?
Yes, I mean, I agree with that. It's a very kind of common sense accepted idea that, if you like, the old adage of an English person's home is their castle. And I think we operate under different kind of standards in our private sphere than we do to our public sphere. And that's only right and proper. So, you know, the kind of things you can say and act and do in public are necessarily going to be different to what you do in your own home. And that would include who you decide to rent a room to.
And the fact that it's renting one room, do you think that's proportionate for when this exception should apply? Because if you're renting two rooms, yes, then you're much more of a commercial landlord, and this doesn't apply.
Well, I'm not sure, but it is. I think this shows the kind of logical mess you get into when you try and extend the law into areas where perhaps a lighter touch would be much better. There is a real overreach happening here, where something like, for example, you know, public bodies are trying to do much more than their core mission. And you can see that in this whole attempt to try and make a society equal by telling everybody, including landlords, who they can and can't rent to.
But Anne, why is it though that we draw the line at you can discriminate when it comes to a lodger, but not when it's more flatmates? Because surely if as a society we want to clamp down on discrimination and be anti-racist, surely you should be anti-racist everywhere.
I think the first thing to remember is the spirit of the law and where it began. Because there were posters, there were groups who were excluded from everything by nature of maybe their religion or the colour of their skin or their accent. People would not rent to them, and there were those infamous notices in the things of boarding houses. Now, as well as that, we know, and it's not really up for debate because there are, I mean, a gazillion scholarly articles, that people do have completely unconscious bias. They might not think they do, but they do. And there are times when I think it's not overreach for the law to say, look, we do have unconscious bias, so we are going to try to take that into account. And sometimes that means giving certain people a little bit of a boost.
Okay,
maybe.
But Alka, what about this idea that Anne was just raising there of unconscious bias, and that actually you need the law and maybe the government and local authorities and other institutions to correct that?
Well, actually, I've got a really good example of that. I'm Indian, and my parents came over to Britain in the early 60s at a time when there were these notices up, as Anne said. And when they were buying their first house in suburbs of London, they were the only non-white people in the street or in the area. The sellers were Welsh, and they told my parents the neighbours had begged them not to sell to my mum and dad because they didn't want any P-word in that area. However, they being Welsh decided to stick a finger up at the English and sold the house to my parents.
There's identity judgments flying in all sorts of directions in
exactly,
this story.
Exactly, but the thing is that without the law, just allowing people the freedom to kind of, you know, socially interact as neighbours, within a year, that neighbour that had said that was asking my mum to hand her nappies over because she just had a baby and they didn't have a washing machine, and she was washing my little sister's
nappies. But are you
saying
that that story proves why we don't need laws to prevent racism?
I'm not saying it doesn't prove anything, but it should give us cause to question whether the law, you know, and when we look at the negative unintended effects of using the law in areas where it shouldn't be used, we need to think more carefully about what we're doing, is what I'm saying.
Okay. Do you know what? I think we can then look at some other examples now, because I can feel we're now edging into territory that goes beyond the private rented sector. Because when this debate was kicking off online last week after the Telegraph's article, lots of people were referencing a particular case where the courts ruled that a housing association for Orthodox Jews was allowed to allocate housing to Orthodox Jews only. So how did that work, and how useful is that example for this discussion? Let's go back to Sarah Steinhardt, the barrister from Doughty Street Chambers. So this was a case about a single mum living in Hackney in East London, and she wanted social housing, and she was on the waiting list for a very long time. And then what happened?